Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on preventing deflation right after this. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor. And we've been taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that? What if your plumber said, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? Or what if your carpenter said, he who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client? Now, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or a carpenter who could not fix his own pipes or fix his own steps is incompetent? Well, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who can't represent himself in court has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or carpenter. Now listen, here's James Nielsen, a professor at the Hastings Law School, when he said, "It is a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed." And he said it's worse than that. He said most students graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real, honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. And a student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom, without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and their clients, that it is a cruel hoax. And that was Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, why don't you ask for our free general law CD package? It doesn't cost you anything. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Now, courtroom strategy and procedures available on compact disc. That's our school for home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. Or call us at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget? Well, the other day I was going through my mail, and I picked out the Privateer. Now, the Privateer, if you'll remember, is a newsletter that comes out of Australia. It's written by a fellow by the name of Buckler, William A.M. Buckler, called The Privateer. It's an economics newsletter. I always recommend it first to my students because Buckler is a national treasure down there in Australia for you Australians. He's got a knack for explaining the complexities of economics in layman's language, you know, so that ordinary people like us, you know, plumbers and carpenters and electricians and housewives, can understand what the hell's going on here on Wall Street and in London and in the inner city and in the economics of the world. What's happening here in the global economic meltdown? And he's good with history. He goes back into historical time. And he's good with modern economics. He can explain to you what these complex financial instruments are. and do it in such a way that ordinary folk can understand what's being done to them. And what's being done to the average Joe Sixpack in the world is more than scandalous, it's criminal. Absolutely criminal. And I'm dumbfounded as I read and I watch this unfounding drama, the collapse of the world's economy. It's almost like watching Noah's flood in the making. And last week we saw God close up the side of the ark. Now Noah and his family are locked inside and all the rest of us are outside over here wondering what's going to happen next. And nothing's happening. For a whole week, Noah and his family are locked in the ark and the world just goes on, business as usual. And people are looking, watching and waiting and they're all informed of the predictions of this great flood. And yet nothing's happening day after day after day. Well, they've got 7 days to stew in their juices. Nothing's going to change. They're not getting into the ark. The people in the ark aren't coming out. The flood hasn't come yet. And for a whole week, they're going to sit there and stew in their juices. And that's where we're at today. The economic collapse is already underway. And nothing's going to stop it. It's going to run its course. You and I are actors on the world stage. We've got our little bit parts to play. Now, along comes the playwright. This is Buckler, and he's going to explain to us now what the next scene is going to be like. And he calls it, in the Global Report, the greatest hoist in history. Here in the United States, we call it a heist. I guess down in Australia, they call it a hoist. He starts off by saying the Obama administration will soon be trying one of history's biggest efforts, the aim being to reliquefy its own financial system, and with that, the global financial system. Its method will be a new tidal wave of U.S. dollars. This is a desperate attempt to stop the U.S. and global deflation in its tracks and to turn it around. The U.S. reflation design works like this. The Treasury Department will supply $1 trillion U.S. dollars to remove toxic mortgage assets from the balance sheets of America's banks. The Federal Reserve will start the first phase of its $1 trillion program to revive the markets for securities backed by consumer and business loans. Now, add to these two initiatives the new $787 billion fiscal stimulus plan and the size of the U.S. monetary and fiscal actions, and it becomes clear. Congress has approved a $787 billion bank bailout package back in October of 2008. Well, this week, President Obama's administration suggested that it may need an additional $750 billion U.S. dollars. So let's look at money versus wealth. You see, wealth is unconsumed economic goods. Money, as such, acts as an intermediary between economic goods of all different kinds, expressing their relative value to each other in terms of the different money prices. Now, the other side of the economic fulcrum looks like this. One can, in simple terms, look upon an economy as a seesaw with money at one end and all of the other real economic goods at the other end and with a fulcrum somewhere in the middle. Now, what the Obama administration is now trying to do is to pile money at one end in the hope that if the pile gets big enough, it will lift the other end by increasing valuations and prices. So let's borrow, print, spend, so we'll all get rich again. What is haunting the United States and the global economy is the enormous fall in valuations across the world. Falls in the value of financial assets worldwide might now have reached more than 50,000 billion dollars. $50,000 billion. Equivalent to a year's global economic output. That's the Asian Development Bank warned on March 9th. That's a number that I'm going to underline. $50,000 billion of equities have been lost. Now, $1,000 billion is a trillion. $1 trillion is $1,000 billion. Now, $1 billion is $1,000,000,000, and $1 million is $1,000,000,000. I mean, you know, we're starting to get up to some big numbers here. $1,000,000,000 is $1 million, $1,000,000,000 is $1 billion, and $1,000,000,000,000 is $1 trillion, and $1,000,000,000,000,000 is called a quadrillion, or a quadrillion, I guess it is. Well, anyway, $50 trillion is equivalent to all of the output of all of the people on planet Earth for a whole year. $50 trillion. That's all the money that everybody in the world is going to make in a year, all the output. Now, that's a bunch, wouldn't you say? Now, official figures from the U.S. record, or they record, rather, that American households got poorer by an average of 18% last year in this housing crash. And while falling stock prices wiped U.S. $11 trillion off their net worth, this is what the Obama administration is trying to overcome with its attempt at a massive reflation. A key measure of net foreign capital investment in the United States, the TIC flows, total investment capital, STIC, come in at a minus U.S. $150 billion in January. That was after an inflow of $86 billion in December. All right, now let's look at that one for a minute. Now that's as Buckler calls it, breathtaking. Breathtaking. In December of 2008, foreigners, people around the world, invested money in the United States at the rate of $86 billion. So they sent their money over here and invested it in our country. 30 days later, in January, they withdrew $150 billion. Now, the thing that makes that bad news is that we Americans need you foreigners, all you people out there in the world, to send us $2 billion a day. I mean, we got to have you people subsidize us at the rate of $2 billion a day. That's just to keep us afloat. That's just to keep us solvent. We have to borrow that much money from you people out there to keep from going upside down, as they say, or insolvent or bankrupt. And in January, you people took out $150 billion. You didn't send us two. You took back $150. You're taking out about $2 billion a day. Now, wait a minute, you foreigners out there. Don't you do that. Don't you make us pay our own bills over here now. That's criminal on your part. We're getting kind of used to the idea of you supporting us, and we like it. Now, how long can this go on? I guess that's what we need to be asking each other is, you know, how long can this thing go on? Because when I'm watching Brian Williams and Marie Bartolomeo, you know, on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, the kind of tripe that comes out of that nonsense, it just boggles my mind. Just watching it makes me almost want to puke, because that's not what's going on out there in the real world. If you're getting your news from CBS and NBC and ABC, you don't know what the hell's going on here. What's going on here is mind-boggling. And to think that this is a minor recession and that everything's going to be fine as soon as Tim Gaither and President Obama get their program on track here and everything is going to smooth out is naive to the extreme. I mean, just absolutely out of this world, out of this mind. You got to be mad to believe that. I mean, stark, raving mad. And yet that's what's being sold, that's what's being told out here in the mainstream press, at least here in the United States. Now, not only is it bad here in the United States, it's bad all around the world, and it's going to get a whole lot worse. There isn't any salvation from this economic collapse. This thing is already too far underway to turn around. That isn't going to happen. What we don't know is how bad is it going to get? What is the bottom? So far, we don't know. It's in free fall yet. Still in free fall. Take a look at these unemployment numbers here in the United States. Here in the country, the peak employment in this country reached about 105 million people, you know, round numbers. Last time I saw a number, I think we had 105 million people employed. We sent 5 million jobs overseas. Then we turned around, and we've now got 5 million unemployed. So my guess is that we have about 95 million, and I think that's about the last number I saw, 95, 94, 93 million still employed. And then I saw the unemployment numbers come out last week, and it was 600 and some odd thousand, 660,000 people signed up for first-time unemployment benefits. 600,000 people, that's more than half a million, lost their jobs last week. This has been going on now for about 4 months. 4 months. Now, what's not being told to you people out there, when you see these unemployment numbers, they're lying to you, and you're not getting all the facts. They're telling you the truth insofar as it goes, but there's more than one way to lie. And one of the neatest ways to lie is to tell you the truth, but don't tell you the whole story. So that when I give you these facts, then those facts will cause you to come to a conclusion in your mind, and that conclusion will be totally erroneous, but that's the conclusion that I want you to arrive at, because I'm not going to give you all of the information. Now, here's the rest of the information that you need to have. When 600,000 people walk in this week to sign up for unemployment benefits, they wait 1 week before they can get their first check. And then they're entitled to 13 weeks of benefits. Okay, so they can draw their unemployment check for 13 weeks. All right, now go back 13 weeks. Because 13 weeks ago, when people came in and signed up, their unemployment ran out this week. And so they're taken off the rolls. They're not called unemployed anymore. Whether they found a job or not, we don't know, but we know that they're not unemployed because we don't count them on the unemployment rolls. And this is called U6. Now, U6 is an important number because it describes the people who have run out of unemployment benefits. And they're no longer counted, but they're still not employed. Or if they are, they are underemployed. That's a college professor with a PhD driving a taxi cab. He falls in what we call the U6 category. He's employed. He's driving a cab. But he's actually underemployed because he's overqualified for cab driver. He doesn't want to drive a cab. He doesn't want to flip burgers. He wants to teach in a university. And he can't find a job in a university because the universities are cutting back. And so here he is, a PhD, or he's whatever he is, and he's unable to find work. Or he's long-term unemployed. He's not driving cab. He's not teaching in the university. He's sitting at home, and his wife is supporting him. That's assuming that she's got a job. Or maybe him and his wife are both unemployed. Both of them have run out, and maybe they're in a tent down by the railroad tracks. They're called homeless now. And nobody's counting those people. Well, they're being counted, but they're not being reported on. It's called U6. Now, this U6 number, last time I saw a number here, was 17%. Now, if you take 17% of 105 million people over here, try this, 17% of 105 million, that's right at 18% unemployment. Now, that's the way they were counting it back in 1935. And in 1935, we had a maximum of 25% unemployment. Now, 25% of 50 million people in the workforce. The workforce was about half our size. And that was about 12 million people that were unemployed. So 12 million unemployed back in 1935. Today, it's around 18 million, about 50% more people unemployed today than there was in 1935. We are, by every measure, in a depression. Every measure. No, nobody's calling it that. And that's because that D word, depression, you see, is going to psych you people out, and then you'll withdraw even further into your shell, and you'll spend even less. And now, the president has a job to do, and I can understand the president and all of the financial men over there. The economy requires confidence. In order to get you to go out and buy a new car, we have to make you believe that everything's fine and that you're not going to lose your job. See, you're one of that 95 million people that's still working. And so you could go out and buy a car, but you haven't done that. And if you don't do that, the people that are building these cars, and last year I think we built 16 or 18 million of them, and the last time I saw a number, it was 9 million. America's auto production has been slashed by 50%, or right at 50%. So last year, when we were selling 18 million cars, or 16 million, I forget which it was there, we had so many people employed in the automobile industry. Well, now you're only building 9 million cars, you only need half as many people. So those people are all unemployed. Well, that has a ripple effect, and it goes down to the people that are supplying the bumpers to all those cars, supplying the alternators and supplying the starters and supplying the glass and all the rest. And so they're only supplying half as much glass, half as many alternators, half as many bumpers. And so they only need half as many employees. Now, when people are fearful of losing their jobs or they're uncertain, they don't want to buy big things, you know, like houses and cars. And when we don't buy the houses and cars, then the people that are making the houses and cars end up on the streets unemployed. Unemployed people don't buy houses and cars either. And so this ripple effect ripples through the economy until at some point in time it reaches the bottom, which we have not reached yet. And we don't know where that's going to be. And so all of the economists, they're saying, well, what we need to do is to stop this deflation. Now, in 1921, we had a deflation. We had a depression in 1921, and that's where prices deflated until they reached the bottom, and it all happened in 1 year. In fact, it happened in less than a year. The prices reached their peak, they collapsed to the bottom in short order, and then we started over. And in every depression, in every recession, the prices have to reach the bottom. And if you keep inflating, then you prevent it from reaching the bottom. It takes longer and longer to reach the bottom. Now, it's going to reach the bottom at some point in time. If you take 6 months to reach the bottom, then that's the end of the depression, and from now on, we can only go up. Can you follow that? But if we keep printing money and putting it into circulation to prevent this deflation, so that we don't reach the bottom. If we never reach the bottom, we will always have perpetual deflation. We will have perpetual depression, perpetual recession, because we're never going to reach the bottom. We're never going to know where the bottom line prices are. Put another way, would you like to go out and buy a house today? Houses today are $200,000. Last year at this time, they were about $400,000. And as they are continuing to fall next year, they'll probably be $100,000. Now, can you explain to me why you would want to go out and buy a $200,000 house today when next year that house is going to be worth $100,000? Or what's worse, you don't have any idea what that house is going to be worth next year. You don't know if it's going to be worth $100,000 or $50,000 or $25,000 or $300,000 or $400,000. And so without any knowledge, why would you want to go out and buy a house? It is true people are doing that today, but I would submit to you that these are people that are not well trained in economics. I wouldn't buy a house today. Why would I want to buy a house today? I don't know if it's going to go up in value, down in value. Why would I want to spend my $200,000 and buy the house today, so that next year I can sell it for $100,000 and lose $100,000? What the hell kind of sense does that make? And boys and girls, that's where we're at. And it isn't just here. It's in Spain and France. It's in Holland and Ireland. It's in Brazil. It's in China. It's everywhere around the world. And so because of this, all of us are sitting here on the edge of our seats wondering, well, how is this thing going to shake out? So let me give you a reminder that this is from the privateer. And I always start my students off by recommending that they start with the privateer and then graduate up to the international forecaster. And that's because the privateer gives you this kind of information and then explains the historical precedents behind it. And you're not getting the whole story. You're getting some of the story, and then they're delivering you to a conclusion that's erroneous because you don't have all the facts. So I would suggest that you go online and take a look at the Privateer webpage. It's called The Privateer. That's The hyphen Privateer. You got to put a hyphen in there. And you can go to www.the-privateer.com. And if you want to send them an email, you go to capt@the-privateer.com. Guy's name is William A.M. Buckler. They got an address. It's P.O. Box 2004, Noosa Heads, Queensland, 4567, Australia. They've also got a phone number. I'll shoot that one to you. It's 617-5471-1960. Once more, that's 617-5471-1960. All right, let's go to page 2. The Enormous Scale of Present World Events is the headline. And it's one of the hardest things to do these days is to describe in any detail the gigantic scale of current events. As already stated, the Asian Development Bank makes a very good effort here by identifying the financial losses in the great global deflation as having already reached the enormous sum of U.S. $50,000 billion or $50 trillion. Now, the privateer in recent past issues has added the equally huge losses in global real estate valuations, taking total losses to more than $100 trillion. Now, so far, I think we're in this thing since December of 07, so December of 08 is 1 year. And then we got January, February, and March. And now we're into April here. We've got 4 more months. So let's see. We've got 15 months. So we're in this thing 15 months. And in 15 months, we have lost $100 trillion. Now, that's $100 trillion worldwide. And there's no end in sight, you people down there in Brazil, down in the Falkland Islands and around the world, in China, Japan. No end in sight. You can't have confidence until we reach the bottom. At some point in time, when we reach the bottom and we bounce around, I don't know where house prices are going here in the United States, but last time I saw a number, they're at around $200,000 average house price, you know, around the country. And they're still going down at the rate of, I don't know, 5, 6%, 8%, 10% a year. So if you bought a house for $200,000 and it went down 10%, you lost $20,000. And nobody wants to do that. And so people are sitting on the sidelines. People who have money, who could buy a house, could buy a car, are not buying. They're not spending. And then when we do that, it has this ripple effect. By not buying that car, by not buying that house, by not taking that vacation or that trip, Disney World the other day announced that they were laying off 2,000 or 3,000 people. You know, if people don't go to Disneyland, well, then the people that work at Disneyland don't have a reason to go to work, do they? And so the Walt Disney Company is laying people off. Now, all those people that get laid off are not going to go out and buy a new car. So that's not good news for you people up in Detroit building cars. and they're not going out and buying any new houses. And that's not good news for all you real estate brokers down there in Florida. It's not good news for me because people that are being laid off are not going to be buying schools. I mean, that's just where reality's at. So if people aren't buying schools, then I'm not going to take a trip. I'm not going to buy a house. I'm not going to buy a car. And so around and around it goes, and it spirals down and down, and it feeds on itself. And that's where we're at right now. We're in the feeding on itself place in our history of this Great Depression. It's unfolding right in front of your eyeballs. So you ought to be taking notes. If you keep a diary, make sure you're making your diary entries every day. Because, you know, in years to come, you'll want to be able to go back and read what was going on day by day as this great deflation was enveloping or developing. And that's 15 months into it. And it may be another 15 months before we reach the bottom, or 36 months before we reach the bottom. Or what's worse, it could be 10 or 15 years before we reach the bottom. Could you picture that? So let's take a look at understanding valuations, markets, and prices. An often inadvertently overlooked factor in all economic and market situations is that not all economic goods in existence are on offer in the marketplace at the same time. In fact, most economic goods rarely enter the marketplace at all. They stand on the sidelines. Now consider the marketplace where things are bought and sold as if it were an expanding or contracting circle. To participate, the economic goods in question have to be brought inside the circle and then offered for sale. All of the other economic goods of similar kind stand outside the market circle and they are not participating. But though these similar economic goods might not be on the market right now, they are affected by the events in the marketplace every day. And what happens is that their valuations change as a consequence of the price changes in the marketplace. If the prices go up, the valuations will follow, and that can often have effects which surprise a lot of people that are unfamiliar with the real marketplace. Well, to give you an illustration, my house is not on the market. I'm not here selling my house. Now, my house had a value. Let's say that it was worth $200,000. Now that real estate values have gone down by 50%, my house is only worth $100,000. My house is still not on the market, but it affected me. It affected me in this way. Had I wanted to go into the marketplace and borrow money, say I wanted to go into the Century Bank here in Gainesville to our banker, Chris Harlan, say, "Chris, I'd like to borrow some money so I can buy some cattle." The banker would have said to me, "Well, Mr. Gordon, what do you intend to offer as collateral?" And I'd say, "I'll offer my house." And he'd say, "Well, last year, I could have offered you $100,000 and taken your house as collateral, and I'd have 50% collateral. But today, your house is only worth $100,000. And it's going down at the rate of 10% or 15% a year. So my banker is going to say to me, I could only offer you $50,000 today so that I'll have that same 50% collateral cushion on your house. But since valuations are going down, I can't offer you $50,000. In fact, my banker would probably say to me, in fact, we're not lending at all. We're not going to lend you any money, period. And that's where business in America, and indeed business around the world, is. The banks are simply saying to us, okay, you've got collateral, and you own your house free and clear, but because there's no stability in the marketplace, we don't have any idea what that house is going to be worth next year, and we don't want to take the risk that house is going to drop in value by another 50% over the next year or 15 months like it has over the last year or 15 months. So therefore, we're going to sit on the sidelines and wait. So that means that I can't buy those cattle. That means that I can't engage in my normal, usual business activities. That impacts upon my income. That impacts upon my employment. It impacts upon the employment of the people who were relying upon me to buy and sell cattle. And so business is at a standstill, at least a lot of us are, and we're all sitting on the sidelines and we're not doing anything. That's what causes great depressions. We're all sitting on the sidelines and we're not doing anything. Ah, but the president is working mightily and he is going to get the logjam unstuck, right? Well, we'll take a look at that when we come back. Meanwhile, let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on Compact Desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we're endorsing and recommending are necessarily going to reciprocate. We should all keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the privateer. Let me give you his name and number again. The privateer is published in Australia. It's $180 a year. In U.S. funds, that's about $130. I think Australian dollars are about 80%. Let's try this. 180 times 0.80. That'd be $144. $144 a year. Worth every penny. Worth every penny. Probably worth double, triple, or quadruple that. You won't find information on a layman's level any more concise and direct than you'll get in the privateer. Economics newsletter, and more than that, it's a history lesson in economics. Every issue, there's something that I learn. Now, we're talking about the valuations here in the marketplace, and these valuations are important because all of us, whether we like it or not, whether we're in the marketplace directly trying to sell our homes or our cars or our cattle or whatever it is, if we're not in the marketplace directly, then the valuations that are being set in the marketplace affect us and our ability to borrow money or to buy, sell, and trade and do business. And so in this case here, when you lost half the value of your house, you lost all of your borrowing power because now the banks don't want to loan you any money because we haven't reached the bottom. And the powers that be are doing everything they can to reflate the economy so that it won't reach the bottom. Do you understand where we're going? You can't have stability until you reach the bottom, and we're going to work as hard as we can to keep from reaching the bottom. Doesn't make any sense, but that's what's going on. And that's what's going to draw and stretch this depression out for years into the future. And what's worse is that we have now printed $12.8 trillion. Now, this is mind-boggling. But we had about $9 trillion worth of money in circulation and in credit. And now we have just added in the last, it isn't even 15 months. It's just started last September, October, with the Bush stimulus plan, which was about $750 billion, $750 billion, as I recalled, and the president just got another $787 billion. And then there was the bailout of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and AIG and the total now is $12.8 trillion of new credit, new money. This isn't necessarily $100 bills being printed up, but this is credit that's being put into the system to keep it liquefied, to keep liquidity in the marketplace, in the economies worldwide. And they're telling us that they have to do that because if they don't, then the economy is going to collapse. Okay. The economy is going to collapse anyway. It's just not going to collapse today, tomorrow, or next week, but it's going to be next year, the year after, or the year after that. So, do we want to get it over with today like we did in 1921 and make it short, sweet, and to the point, or did we want to drag it out like we did from 1929 to 1939? You know, the choice is ours. That's what we did the last time. And that's what we're going to do this time. That would be my prediction based upon what I see going on around us. Now listen to this. Here's a historical fact. Henry Morgenthau was the Secretary of the Treasury in 1939, Henry Morgenthau was his name. Now, that was in the New Deal administration of Franklin D. Roosevelt. Now, Morgenthau was testifying before Congress in 1939. You know, just like Henry Paulson, you know, would go up in front of Congress and he'd testify. Remember, you see that on TV. And then here comes Timothy Gaither, you know, our new Secretary of the Treasury. Every once in a while, you know, he's on the news and he'll be testifying before Congress, and the senators and representatives are asking him questions and so on. Okay. Well, that's what was going on in 1939. Henry Morgenthau is standing, or in this case sitting, in front of the Congress, and he's testifying. And here's what he told them. He said, for 6 years, we have done everything that we can think of to stimulate the economy, to reliquify the economy, to prevent the deflation. And everything that we have tried so far has not worked. Now, when I went to public school, they told us that Franklin Roosevelt and the New Deal, the CCC and the WPA and all the programs that were put in, that's what saved us from the Depression. God bless Franklin D. Roosevelt. He saved us from the Depression. That's what I learned when I went to school. Today, they're still teaching that same lie, that Franklin D. Roosevelt saved us from the Depression. Boys and girls, unemployment in 1939 was as high as it was in 1933. And all of the stimulus packages and everything that was tried and done from 1933 to 39 proved to be a big goose egg. It spent a lot of money, created a lot of debt, stirred up a lot of hate and discontent and a lot of dust in the process. But in the final analysis, did absolutely nothing. And Morgenthau testified to that fact. Now, if you think that doing what we did in the Depression years, in this Depression, is going to bring us a different result, boys and girls, is the classic definition of insanity. That's where you do the same thing over and over and over again, expecting a different result. It's preposterous on its face. It didn't work then, it ain't working now, and it ain't likely to work in the future. And that's exactly what they're going to do, because that's exactly what they've said they're going to do, And that's exactly what they are, in fact, doing. So I just wanted to pass that on to you as a reporter and say, okay, what's coming down the pike is going to turn out to be as bad as or worse than the last time around. When you're doing a depression and you want to solve the problem, you need to reach the bottom as soon as possible. The sooner you reach the bottom, let's just try this out. My daughter had a house in, I think it's Tempe or Scottsdale, Arizona, in downtown Phoenix, but some little town around there. This is 10, 12, 14 years ago, and she said our house is $232,000. That was the mortgage they had, $232,000, was 10 years ago. And she said, if we tried to sell that house today, we think we'd get $200,000. We'd still be underwater by $32,000, and so that's why we can't sell it. Now, her husband got transferred to San Diego, so she moved to San Diego, California. And they rented their house. And they made up the difference between the rent payments and what the house payments were out of their pocket. Now, some years went by, and this house appreciated in value. And the last time I asked her about it, she said it was worth $600,000. Now, this is a few years back, you know, 3 or 4 years back, about the peak, you know, 2005, 6, long in there. The house had gone from $232,000 to $600,000. And the other night, my wife was talking to my daughter on the telephone, and she said, today, they think it's worth $400,000. They think it's worth $400,000. That's assuming they could find somebody, or they could find the financing for it. So it went from $230,000 to $600,000. Now it's down to $400,000. And it's losing value. And the last time I saw some numbers down around Phoenix, at around 10% a year. So it's losing $40,000 a year. Now, that's good. And if she could sell it today, she would still be money ahead of where she was. So she's not underwater. Boys and girls, there's a new round of housing bubble poppings to occur, or housing crisis to occur, starting in June of 2009 here in the United States. So for the rest of you people in the world, when we Americans sneeze, you people are going to get pneumonia. Then we're about to sneeze. Worse than that, we're about to come down with pneumonia here ourselves. Take a look at all of the chaos that has occurred in the last 15 months. And it's caused by the housing bubble deflation. But we haven't got to the biggest part of the housing bubble deflation yet. So far, all of the deflation in housing that has occurred represents about 10% of the total housing bubble that is about to deflate. As bad as it is now, we ain't got to the bad part yet. And that's what nobody's telling you. But that's what the International Forecaster, which is put out by Bob Chapman, and the Privateer, which is put out by William Buckler, have been reporting on for years. And these numbers aren't secret. I mean, I'm not delving into the CIA or some secret agency over here to get these numbers here for you. Hell, this is out here. It's on the internet, for crying out loud. These guys are getting these numbers right out of the official publications, and that's what they're telling us. And what they're not telling us is put out by an outfit called Shadow Stats, shadowstats.com, if you want to jot that one down. And here's what that operation is all about. If we go back to looking at statistics the way we did 20 years ago or 30 years ago or 50 or 75 years ago, we got some true numbers. Today, when we get numbers out of our government, they're lies. Well, they're lies, half lies, and mixed lies with some truth, which deceives us continuously. And shadowstats.com takes a look at, well, what would the numbers be telling us today if we were still keeping records the way we did, you know, 50 or 75 years ago? In other words, if we weren't lying to you, what would the numbers be telling us? see, today they're telling you that the unemployment rate is 8.5%, and that's correct. It's 8.5% of some number. But what they're not telling you is they're not giving you the U6 number. They're giving you the current number of people that are looking for work. And it's 8.5% of the number of people that are currently looking for work. They're not telling you about the people that are chronically unemployed and aren't looking for work, or the people that are unemployed or underemployed, driving taxi cab, but really actually want to be college professors. They're not telling you those numbers. That's what we used to report years ago, but we're not reporting that today. So we're getting skewed numbers. That's what the bottom line is. And what they haven't told you is that there is a housing collapse coming that is going to dwarf what has already occurred. That's the mind-boggling part of it. So if you think things are bad now, you haven't seen nothing yet. So my wife told my daughter, said, well, you better sell that house as soon as you can. In fact, a couple of 3 years ago, my wife said, sell your house for $600,000, move to Jacksonville, Florida. Take $150,000 and buy that same house in Jacksonville. Take the difference, pay off your mortgage, and bury the rest in gold and hole in the ground and sit back and relax. And my daughter said, oh, no, no, I don't want to do that. I've always wanted to live in a $500,000 house. Well, now our house ain't worth a $500,000 no more. It's worth something less than that. And starting in June, it's going to go down in value from the $400,000 to something less than that, because all you people out there now, listen up. Whatever your house is worth today, cut that in half. Cut it in half, because that's where we're headed starting in June. And then that'll take 18 months to unravel. See, this first housing problem has taken about 18 months to unravel. By the time we get to June, it's going to be about 18 months. And then right on the heels of the first 18 months comes the second 18 months of unraveling of the second round of the housing bubble collapse. And God only knows where that one's going to take us. And I'm not a prophet, so I'm not here to tell you that housing prices are going down by 50% or 100%. I can't tell you. Hell, I don't know. God doesn't talk to me, and I'm not a prophet. I'm a reporter. I'm just telling you, here's what's going on around you right now today. And then suggesting to you that you start by getting the information directly from the source, and that's from William A.M. Buckler. Let me give you his name and number again. The Privateer comes out twice a month, 25 issues a year, I believe it is. And we're looking at the 2009 volume, late March, issue number 625. This is number 625, the late March issue. And it's put out by The Privateer, the private market letter for the individual capitalist, published since 1984, 25 issues a year, copyright 2009, all rights reserved. Publisher is A.M. Buckler, William A.M. Buckler. And their post office box is 2004, Noosa Heads, Queensland, 4567, Australia. Then you can go online and you can go to www.the-privateer.com. They've got a hyphen between the and privateer. It's not all one word. So it's the-privateer.com, or you can send them an email, and it'll be to capt@the-privateer.com. And their phone number is 617-5471. 1960. Again, that's 617-5471-1960. And I got to tell you, I'm always amazed when I get a phone call from Australia. It is just as clear as a bell. I mean, the guy could be sitting across the desk from me. And that's how well you can hear a guy by satellite from Australia to Isabella, Missouri. And the cost isn't even very great. I have students that call me from Australia quite often, and the nickel a minute, something like that. Nickel a minute. It's dirt cheap. So if you want to call down there, jump on the phone and give them a call. Now, I'm recommending The Privateer, not that they're going to recommend the Law Hour and Editorial Review. I mean, if you told them that you got this from George Gordon, he'd probably refuse to sell you a newsletter. I don't know that positively, but I just wanted to point out that just because I recommend somebody doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to recommend us. But this has got to be, without a doubt, the beginner or the primer in economic newsletters. You can understand it. If you're a truck driver, if your IQ is down around 80, it's all right. You're going to be okay. You can understand this. As dumb as I am, I can understand this guy. Now, he goes on and he tells us a little bit more. He says, often after prices have climbed perhaps only 10, 15%, the climbing prices stop rising and might even fall back. And what has happened here is that the holders of the similar economic goods, seeing the prices rise, have brought their economic goods inside the market circle. This expands the circle while also causing the volume of supply of such economic goods to increase. Once this new supply of these economic goods has been exhausted, the price of the economic goods restarts its ascent again. And when the price exceeds the preceding high, other players inside the market actually start to pay attention. People outside the market circle who own similar economic goods watching this have two choices. They can swing their economic goods inside the market circle and offer them for sale and then leave with a financial gain. Or, having sold the prices higher than they originally paid, they can stay outside the circle and play with valuation. Ah, the valuation game. Playing the valuation game means standing outside the market circle but using the climbing economic value as collateral for loans. These loans are then used for other purposes, while the valuation players still own the economic good in question, and that's what we've all done. While the marketplace was telling us that our houses are worth $600,000, we went out and borrowed money against our houses, and then we bought new cars and took vacations and sent our kids to college and did all kinds of other things. Ah, but then when the valuations went down and the bubble broke, my daughter's house isn't worth $600,000, now it's only worth $400,000. Now, fortunately for her, she didn't go out and borrow money against it, but many, many people did. And that's why the depression is on, because so many people took advantage of the valuation game and they went out and they borrowed money against their houses and used it for other purposes. So while they didn't actually get out and buy and sell and trade real estate, they were using their real estate as the basis for making loans. And the banks went out there and made those loans, and now all of us are upside down. The United States of America is bankrupt. That's the bottom line. And the truth be known, with few exceptions, nearly all the countries of the world are bankrupt. That's the big story. And that's what nobody's telling you. Any concepts, boys and girls, that President Obama and Timothy Gaither are going to reflate through inflation the economy and put us back to where we were just a year or two or three ago is a dream. It's a pipe dream. It's just pure poppycock. It's bad now, and it's going to get worse. And then after it gets worse, it's going to get worser. Then it's time to wake up and smell the coffee. Remember, that's the privateer. $180 Australian a year, about $150 U.S. Well, I'm about out of time. I've got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.